Today marks 20 years since Australia's first medically supervised drug injecting room opened in Sydney's King's Cross. When former New South Wales Labor Premier Bob Carr announced the centre would go ahead, there was considerable opposition from many powerful quarters, including the then Prime Minister, John Howard.
Well, it's not something that I support. I doubt very much if it will be seen to work. It sends a very bad signal. Perhaps some would argue that, others might argue that to the extent that it makes the practice seemingly more socially acceptable, it might encourage more people to take it up, which could in turn lead to more deaths. I don't know.
That was the then Prime Minister, John Howard, speaking in 2001. Since that centre opened, it has supervised more than 1.2 million injections and managed more than 10,000 overdoses without a single death. I'm joined now by the centre's medical director, Dr. Marianne Jauncey. Welcome back to breakfast.
Thank you, Hamish.
How do you reflect on those comments from John Howard 20 years on?
Look, there's a small element of PTSD hearing some of those accusations from the early days, but I am really pleased that in 20 years we have roundly got the support from community, from the area of King's Cross, from medical quarters, from counsellors, from families, and from those most affected by the issue. There is nobody sensible left that doesn't acknowledge that supervised injecting facilities save lives, make a difference, take injecting off the street, and the question remains why there's only one.
Yeah, why did it stop there? Because this was an 18-month trial initially, then it was made permanent. But why did it stop there?
Look, it took 10 years for us to become permanent. It was one of the longest running trials that I think any of us were aware of. And obviously it was a deeply political and sensitive issue. And, you know, I get that. Drugs, even by saying the word, is something that tends to cause a deep kind of internal, almost visceral reaction in many of us based on fear and confusion and misunderstanding. And so I understand that it is a difficult thing for people to respond to. And all I would say to that is we've got to pull our heads out of the sand and live in the real world. People inject drugs. Around this state in New South Wales for nearly 35 years, we've been providing clean injecting equipment knowingly to people in order to inject drugs. Now, we do that in order to prevent an epidemic of HIV. And in fact, we've been more successful than most other places on the entire planet. Much like COVID, it was a very practical, pragmatic, and early response that Australia had. And it worked. We have one of the lowest rates of HIV because we provide clean injecting equipment. So in this state, every year, 13 million needles are given out. But every single place other than 66 Darlinghurst Road, what happens is we provide the equipment, we give the advice that we can, and then we say, have a nice day. Now you must leave. Now you must go away from a health service and use those drugs somewhere else. Now, to me, that's just nonsensical and at some level a failure in our duty of care as a health service.
I do want to come to what the implications of this have been, but can you just take us back to 2001? How did this actually get up? Because it strikes me that in an environment now where we often struggle to have sensible conversations around things like pill testing for young people, we haven't particularly moved on as a society in how we're able to talk about this stuff. What was it? Who was it? What were the ingredients that led to this actually happening?
I agree that we haven't really moved on, and it is a point of sadness for many. Back in 1999, this country had more heroin overdose deaths than people dying on the road from motor vehicle accidents. And I think the combination of a couple of things, some key people in government, a very high level of public awareness and concern, an area in King's Cross where the local community had actually dealt with this for a long time and really didn't want to continue and were prepared to try something different. In King's Cross, there was the dubious honour of having the highest heroin overdose death toll of anywhere in the world and an ambulance attending a heroin overdose every 12 hours around the clock. in 1999, and then some very focused media attention from the Sun Herald and a headline, "We give our kids heroin injection kits instead of help." And it was the then Premier Bob Carr who announced a drug summit, and it was absolutely and utterly crucial. And it wasn't just kind of a half day or a day long talk fest. Parliament was closed for 5 days, and people from all over, all different walks of life, came to all talk together. And people met people who inject drugs for the first time. Politicians spoke to people who inject drugs, people who used to inject drugs, family members who'd lost their children. And I think that had a profound impact. That it wasn't just the us and them. People understood that it's all us. And so it was out of that 1999 drug summit that one of the recommendations was that the government would not veto a proposal from a local community area, and that came from King's Cross.
Do you think over time it has done what John Howard feared, and that is normalise the use of drugs?
No, because if I thought that, I wouldn't support that and I wouldn't keep working there, and we wouldn't have the support of the medical fraternity that we do. What we know is that people inject drugs. They inject their drugs generally as soon as they can after they've bought their drugs. And if there is a service nearby that is acceptable and non-judgmental, they will use that. So if people buy drugs in other parts of New South Wales, as I would suggest to you they do, given we give out 13 million needles in this state, as we do all over Australia, they won't travel to the service to use that. Now, I actually wouldn't mind if they did, but they don't. When they come to the service, they are provided with clean injecting equipment, as happens everywhere else. But crucially, there's health people, nurses and counsellors, whose job it is to work with them, to create a relationship and a connection with them, to start the conversations about helping them consider what other possibilities and options they have, to talk to them about treatment, to talk to them about finding permanent accommodation, dealing with some of the mental health issues.
Does that often lead anywhere? I'm just interested to know, do those conversations actually lead to people getting off drugs?
Yes, they absolutely do. And I'm really proud at the event that we have later today for our 20-year anniversary celebration. We'll be hearing from one of those people who's now decided to talk up and speak about his experience. And he says he's had, 2,500 injections or something, and he describes himself as a committed heroin user. But it was coming to MSIC and starting to believe that something else was possible that started his journey. And he's now been over 2 years without injecting any substances at all.
What's the picture in terms of who is using drugs and what drugs they're using now compared with 20 years ago?
The type of a person that we're seeing is largely similar, but they've gradually gotten a bit older. So around Australia, less young people are taking up injecting as a way to take drugs, and that's wonderful because injecting is the most risky way to take any kind of a substance. So the less we do it, the better. However, we do tend to see more men than women. That's consistent around the world. We see a high proportion of people who are homeless and literally living under a bridge or on a street. And we also see a very high proportion of people with significant mental health issues. And sometimes navigating both the medical world and the mental health world, as well as the drug and alcohol world, is tricky, and people fall through the cracks, unfortunately.
Over this two-decade period, you've supervised something, not you personally, but the centre has supervised more than 1.2 million injections. There's been no deaths. The case that, as you put it, is fairly compelling. Why is it, do you think, that politicians, though, are not shifting their view of this broader conversation? You know, it is an active conversation in many states of Australia about whether we should be pill testing for young people. And often the political response is, we don't want to do anything that gives license to this activity. We don't want to tell young people it's okay. Why do you think, given everything that you've experienced over the last two decades, you haven't changed what people think about that?
two responses. The first is actually people's responses are changing, and we know from a National Drug Strategy Household Survey, a large random sample of people all around Australia that's done every few years, we've seen a gradually increasing acceptance and understanding of harm reduction measures, and we've got good support in the general community for not responding with criminalisation, for providing people with safer alternatives for supervised injecting facilities and things like that. At a political level, I think two things are happening. One, I think privately, you'll get a lot of people who do understand and do agree wholeheartedly with a lot of these measures. The problem is there's a concern about how it will be dealt with in the media and the fear that can so easily be drummed up just by the mention of the word drugs. And it's very easy to create a perception that somehow, you know, the sky will fall in if we do this tiny, small, you know, advance. What I would say is that the evidence around the world, not just from our service, is compelling. There's 28 or 29 countries that have elements of decriminalisation, many that have access to drug testing, and nothing has been shown to make it more likely that people take drugs. In fact, the opposite is true. When you treat people in a non-judgmental way and provide them with information, they are more likely to make better and healthier decisions. And I would encourage all of us to start little by little being prepared to have slightly more honest and open conversations about the realities of substance use, because it is both legal and illegal in this country and the laws actually don't make sense.
Dr. Mariana Jauncey, thank you very much.
Pleasure, Hamish.
That's the Medical Director of the Uniting Medically Supervised Injection Centre, as it's called officially. And of course, if that story raises any concerns for you, you can call the National Alcohol and Other Drug Hotline on 1800 250 015.